Pelosi lobby firm creates fake anti-climate letters to Congress. The letters were forged to look like they were from African-American and Hispanic local nonprofit groups. And finally, everyone talks about the weather, but few people actually do much about it. How TV weathermen tend to be the last stand for climate denial. All that coming up today on Earthbeat. Welcome to Earthbeat, the Climate Crisis Broadcast. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm afraid that is not what you're welcome to at the moment. In fact, you're welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, coming up next on Free Radio. Stay tuned. It's around 6 o'clock on August 13th, and we'll have a fire update in about 2 minutes, so don't go away. Hold on that for a moment, because we have a startling update from our hotsy-totsy man on the fire zone, Uncle Dennis, who will actually be coming into the studio in about 2 hours to give his own hot rendition of old hot songs. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Robert. How are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm not burning up. It's actually kind of cool here in the studio, but others are, apparently.
Well, apparently the last update we have on the Bonnie Doon fire, which is actually called the Lockheed Fire officially, is that the fire line has crossed the Empire Grade Road, probably above Pine Flat Road. We don't have the exact location, but it's headed south and west, being driven by the prevailing winds this afternoon. Probably at this point in time, there's around 3,000 acres burning or burned, probably 1,000 to 1,500 structures are immediately threatened by this fire. Mandatory evacuations include the entire Bonnie Doon area. That includes Empire Grade, Smith Grade, Ice Cream Grade, Pine Flat Road, and all the areas around there, as well as the Swanton area, including Swanton Road and Last Chance Road and the areas in that area. Apparently, the Davenport evacuation was called off earlier this morning, but it may be back on if the wind shifts more easterly. The evacuation center is now at Vintage Church, which is located at Highway 1 and Mission Street in Santa Cruz. Large animals, horses, cows, such like, are being evacuated to the county fairgrounds in Watsonville. And the small animal evacuation center is at 7th and Rodriguez, which is the county animal center there. They don't know the cause of the fire that started about 7 o'clock last night in the mountains just to the west of the Lockheed facility. But it's been burning steadily since then and more than tripled in size since this morning. So this is a pretty big deal, and unfortunately it is blowing towards Santa Cruz itself. We don't know how long or where the containment will be achieved, but right now it's an uncontained or wildfire. Please do not attempt to travel in the area. Felton Road up the hill is closed, Empire Grade is closed, Bonnie Doon Road is closed. I believe that Highway 236 out of Boulder Creek also has a closure on it. So just stay out of the hills. If you know people who live up there, you might want to offer them a place to stay. I know that folks across from me here in the harbor had to evacuate their home, and we're doing everything we can to help. There are hundreds of firefighter trucks in the area. There's currently 14 aircraft involved, 8 helicopters and 6 fixed-wing aircraft. They're trying to protect structures right now in the Bonnie Doon area. So if folks have any questions and they want to contact CAL FIRE, their number is 335-6717. Once again, that's 831-335-6717 if folks want additional information about the fire.
That's a great update, Dennis. You are, you've been following it, I take it, fairly regularly. You're getting your updates, what, by calling CAL FIRE, or how are you getting updates?
Getting updates by looking at the CAL FIRE website. We've also got emails from CAL FIRE, and, of course, the CNIL did an update at about 3:30 this afternoon.
And you'll be doing more updates about 8 o'clock when your show comes on?
I will check for more updates. Folks, CAL FIRE are busy fighting the fire, so they don't have a whole lot of time to do updates. But they will answer questions, and I'm going to give them a call before the 9 o'clock Earth First update. So we will cover the fire at 9 o'clock.
All right. Well, I will try to stay off the mountaintops.
Yes, for sure. And, wish good thoughts to the firefighters up there because they have a hell of a job. It's very, very rugged terrain. It's very, very dry, and the winds are blowing.
And it's hot, for God's sake.
It was 85 on the hill.
Hey, thank you, Uncle Dennis.
Bye-bye, Robert. Bye-bye. Have a good show.
Thank you, man. And Uncle Dennis will be back at 8 with his own show and with more updates, both around the fire, around Earth First, and who knows what else, plus from the cream to the dregs, which is, of course, the substance of his show, having to do with a lot of music. From olden times. In the studio with me, however, getting back to my show here, which is called Bathrobes, Fears, Broadsides, is Micah Posner, or is it Posner? I'm never sure which. What's the story on that, Micah?
Micah Posner.
Yeah, not a poser, but a Posner.
Well, on a good day.
Yes. And sitting by with a caustic comment, of course, is a person who doesn't want to be identified, but she may come out of the closet at some point and make a few pungent comments. So, for those who are interested in what we're going to be talking about tonight, at least at the first conversation of the evening with Micah, is about an upcoming ride on Sunday, beginning at 11:30, going till 1 o'clock, which is actually featured on Top Story on Santa Cruz Indie Media. It's called the Santa Cruz Memorial Bike Ride. And, Micah, you provide a lot of information on here, including history, details. I added a few items myself, actually, and mentioned this radio interview. And I want to mention the phone number for call-ins in case anybody wants to call in and ask questions, make comments. The call-in number here at Free Radio, and that's what you're listening to, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, is, get your pencil, 831-427-3772, 427-3772, or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, for those who don't like numbers. So, Micah, let's, and please do call in if you got some questions for Micah, comments, thoughts. This is a bike ride, which actually, last time I talked to you, and I think I We I'm not sure if we ever we played. I think we did play the tape from a previous planned King Street bike ride that actually didn't come off because it was more of a sort of a community get together on the street where you stop people who are driving by and chatted, had some showed some bike power kind of devices, and I don't know, I think it was lemonade and cookies of some kind was available. Kids were having a good time. We're all stretched out on the grass. The neighborhood seemed to be participating. And this has to do, I guess, with the right of bikers to ride on Mission Street, and yet the dangerousness of riding on Mission Street and the possibility of an optional King Street bike lane, bike thoroughfare. Give us all the skivvy on this, Micah.
Thanks, Robert. Well, it at a basic level, I think there's a problem, which is that two cyclists were killed on Mission Street, and there's also not a really safe alternative to Mission Street for inexperienced cyclists. I mean, for myself, you know, King Street's okay. The drivers try to be respectful, but there's two issues. One is that there's no safe alternative for kids and other inexperienced riders, and the other is that there's no safe way even for a confident, experienced rider to ride on Mission Street. And there's three bike shops on Mission Street, numerous businesses. So even though it's better for cyclists to avoid Mission as a throughfare, we need to be able to use it to access it as a commercial district. So those are two separate problems. And after the two deaths on Mission Street, those were both pointed out to the city.
Two biker deaths.
Two deaths of cyclists, both of them experienced cyclists. Neither one was doing anything, you know, particularly irresponsible, and we can get into the accidents if you want later in the show.
And the person who killed them, people who killed these bicyclists, I take it, are not being charged with manslaughter or anything of the kind, or are they?
No, I mean, the people that killed them were behaving in the way that's, all the players, the cyclists and the truck drivers, were all using the street in sort of the way it was designed, so that if there's manslaughter charges, it should be...
Arrest
you know,
the city manager, perhaps?
Yeah, or Caltrans, or, you know, the whole system. The system is at fault. And you know, we call them accidents, but they're not really accidents. I mean, they're planned events. The transportation system that we have in place, it kills people.
It makes it more likely to happen.
It doesn't make it more likely. It's accounted for. I mean, people are going to die. The history starts when they widen Mission Street. So they widened Mission Street, what was it, around 1999. It took a few years. And they made absolutely no amenity for cyclists. And keep in mind, this is a neighborhood of the city where 10 to 20% of trips are done by bicycle. And here's a major thoroughfare with three bike shops, numerous businesses. They widened it. They made no amenity for cyclists. At the time, the director of People Power, Ron Goodman, said, someone is going to get killed on this street. And Marty Wormhout said, I understand. And so this is a known thing. Like
Marty
they
Wormhout,
knew.
The supervisor.
She was supervisor at the time. You know, she said, this is a good plan, except that the bicyclists are losing out. So... So they knew. I mean, this was a planned event. They knew people were going to die. And actually, one of the reasons that I moved over from my cushy job in PedEx to People Power was I watched. It wasn't cushy, but it was more fun than just being an activist. But I watched this happen. I watched this horrible thing happen in Mission Street.
Kind of describe what these two accidents were briefly.
Well, in both. Well, let me just cut to Chase real quick. We'll get back to that.
Sure.
So the chase is, as far as why we need to ride, is that the city hasn't done anything. So Caltrans has tried to help. They offered to put up signs. The city actually got in the way of having the best signs. In the end, we put up signs that, you know, they're okay, they're helpful. But so Caltrans offered to help. Ecology Action has run a campaign to educate truck drivers. John Laird tried to call a public discourse, brought everyone to the table. The city has done absolutely nothing. I'd like to get into that more in the show, but if you want to talk about the accidents, we first, in terms of the timeline. But I just want to put that out. So if you care about life on that corridor, bicycle life, the right to ride, you need to come on a ride because we need to take to the streets. I mean, I've been working with city council and city bureaucrats for years, and we don't always need to take to the streets. Sometimes the city is good, and we work through the democratic process. But in this particular case, we're looking at two deaths within a year and complete inaction on the part of the city. In fact, I can explain it an hour later, the city's actually gotten in the way of some sort of more grassroots and community oriented solutions.
Captain Clark gave you a citation for the previous bike ride because you hadn't applied for a permit or something to that effect? Or?
We're sort of jumping all over the place. Where do you want to start? Do you want to go back to the accidents or go to the...
I'm just making a comment about...
Well, I'm happy to talk about that, too. I just want to know.
Culpability. You can jump in wherever you'd like. I mean, I think the only reason I ask about the accident is not... I'm not trying to make a long deal about it, but just briefly, two people were killed. How did they happen? They didn't suddenly say, well, please hit me with my bike.
No, I think that's a good place to start, actually, because we're sort of going in order. So first they build a street that has no place for bicyclists, even though there's three bike shops on it, and no obvious alternative, particularly on the north side, which is the more popular side to ride because it's close to UCSC. So then 3-4 years. Oh, and the other thing about the widening mission is when they did it, they said that it was to take traffic off the residential street. So we'll get to that later in terms of how it affects King, mm-hmm. our proposal
King
for
King. Is the next street up from Mission.
King is the obvious alternative to Mission.
Parallel to it, right?
Right. There's some other alternatives to the south that are okay, but... the traffic is more likely, bicyclists are more likely need to get around to the north of Mission. And crossing Mission is so horrible that having a south alternative doesn't do it if you're coming or going from the north. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so both these cyclists were riding to the right of cars, which is where drivers usually expect us to ride. And in both cases, truck drivers didn't see them. Now, it's sort of academic. It's a truck. It could have been a Prius. It could have been anything. The point is, although trucks do have more blind spots than those cars, but in both cases, the point is they were riding to the right. The trucks didn't see them. In the first death, and they were both very experienced cyclists. In the first death, John Mislin, who died 2 years and a week ago, a truck driver turned right into him at the intersection of Bay and Mission. Mm-hmm. Now, the police found John in fault for his own death because he... Well, because he was riding to the right, basically. And the police said that he may have passed the truck. Now, even the police don't claim that he was passing cars at high speed or anything like that. But it could have been, and we're not sure, that there was a whole line of cars. And John slowly and carefully rode by to the right, which put him in the blind spot of the truck. And the truck turned right. Now, if, hypothetically, we should be riding to the right as if there was a bike lane on Mission where there's not... That is how you ride. I mean, if you are riding to the right, you do pass cars slowly and carefully. So our response at People Power seems obvious if you read the police report. He should have been riding in the middle of the lane. You know, he should have been riding in the middle lane. So he couldn't have passed the truck, and the truck couldn't have run over him. Now, so we made we meaning the whole bicycle community, College Action, everyone involved, the Traffic Safety Commission, made a series of recommendations. One of our recommendations was to try to educate drivers and cyclists about the fact that when cyclists ride Mission, which we're not necessarily encouraging, but when we do ride Mission, for a block or two to get to a bike shop or to cross the street or because it's someone new in town, they don't know any better. Ride in the middle of the right-hand lane, mm-hmm. which would have completely prevented these accidents. So we thought the police would be right with us because if you read the police report, they blamed Mislin for riding to the right. Instead, the police have done everything they can. I think it's the police, could be the city manager, it's some of the apparatus of the city, but it is definitely Captain Clark speaking for the police department.
Steve Clark to you, buddy.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. They've done everything they can to prevent us from educating cyclists about using the right lane. So there was a public meeting with John Laird that he called, and it was great because for once John Laird brought, cyclists and activists to the table. Often these meetings happen without, the public, but he brought everyone to the table. Caltrans came to the meeting with signs that said cyclists allowed full use of the right lane. The chief of police, Howard Scarry, stood up and said, I'm not sure cyclists have the right to the lane. Now, this is in lieu of a police report in which he blames the cyclists for riding to the right. So the question that I asked both Captain Clark and Chief Scarry is, where, as leaders of safety, traffic safety, where should we ride on Mission? And that you will not get an answer out of them. If you're listening... call Howard Scarry right now or Captain Clark and say...
You got a phone number for the chief? Actually, we probably do somewhere. I'll look it up online.
You probably do somewhere. You think about chief more than I do. And ask them, where should I ride on Mission? And they won't answer you. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Say, you're leaders in traffic safety. I know you care about safety. I mean, let's presuppose that all this is true and ask them, where should we ride on Mission? And they will not tell you. And that is not okay. That is an abdication of their responsibility to keep everyone safe, not just car drivers, not just business people, not just commercial traffic, but everyone on the street safe, and they are not taking that responsibility seriously.
Interestingly enough, for those who are interested, Captain Steve Clark's phone number, he's the operations chief, is available online. It is 420-5847. That's 420-5847. I'm also going to put that into the notes on the website for those who want to contact Steve and ask him what's cooking.
So this little pimple came to a head at a city council meeting where because Caltrans was getting all kinds of strange messages from the city staff, it had to go to city council meeting. Because Caltrans said, well, we're willing to put up the signs, but you're the city, you know, tell us what to do. So that was fair enough. I mean, you can't blame them. So it went to a city council meeting, and the city attorney, John Barisoni, explained that the way he interpreted it, so the California Vehicle Code says that, for the most part, cyclists should ride to the right of cars. However, if a street is too narrow, or if a cyclist is within, I think it's either 50 or 100 yards, sorry, I should have brought the vehicle, but if it's within, let's say, 50 yards of a dedicated right-hand turn, that the cyclist may use the full lane. That's the vehicle code. So both of those conditions are true of Mission. And I've spoken to the people that, you know, the policy wonks that have helped write this, that are in the Caltrans Bicycle Committee. Both of those conditions are true on Mission. A standard engineered traffic lane is 12 feet wide. Now, whether that's wide enough for a cyclist to ride to the right is a little bit debatable. Some people argue it should be 15 feet wide to ride to the side of the road. But 12 feet is the minimum standard. The lanes on Mission are 11 feet wide. And I actually worked with a cyclist who got a ticket on Mission 12 years ago, a guy named Nikos. We went to traffic court. We won because the lanes were 11 feet wide. They threw it out. So, unfortunately, traffic court doesn't set a legal precedent. Anyway, so the lanes are too narrow. Also, there are right-hand turn motions on Mission every few yards. I mean, either to large parking lots or actual residential streets or traffic lights or whatever. With every few yards on Mission, there's a right-hand turn. So we were at a city council meeting talking about this and trying to, you know, flesh out these signs, which, of course, were an allegory for the basic conflict. The city attorney says the way he interprets the California Vehicle Code is that too narrow depends on the vehicle. So if you're next to a Prius, this is a quote from him, if you're next to a Prius, you should ride to the right. But if you're next to a truck, you should get in front of the truck. So just think about that for a minute if you're listening. So we all thought about that in the audience, and a high school teacher named Stacy blurted out, that's crazy. You're trying to get us killed. I mean, whether it makes sense to a lawyer or not, like how what he described would happen on the street is total suicide. I mean, first of all, you'd have to have some kind of radar device to know when a truck was behind you, and then you'd have to pull out in front of the truck, you know, to take your right to the lane because you were by the Prius before, right? But now there's a truck, so you have to pull out right in front of a truck. I mean, it's totally crazy. And what really makes me angry, to be honest, is that it shows a total disregard for human life. I mean, I don't know if he was talking about, you know, if he's spouting legal stuff because there might be a lawsuit or because he wants to make sure there's development or he's trying to protect, you know, Captain Clark because Captain Clark said the same thing on TV. I don't know what their motivations are. But our motivations as a community should be about human safety and human life. And to say that at a public meeting was total criminal negligence, completely irresponsible as a public servant to the community.
You're calling John Barisoni, our city attorney, criminally negligent.
In that instance,
how dare you? How dare you attack our city attorney? Actually, I'm the one who usually attacks the city attorney.
I know. I'm a little upset because we're talking about life and death, and we expect our public officials to make that their first priority. And they were not, because no one could say that interpretation of the California Vehicle Code is particularly safe. I mean, you could argue like, well, that's the legalese and blah, blah. But when it comes to safety, come on, John, that is not a safe way to ride. You know it, and you should not be saying that at a public meeting.
So what was his response to this?
Well, you know, city council public meetings, there was no direct response. I mean, we've asked the police and Mr. Barisoni several times to try to have a dialogue about this. You know, I asked Howard Scarry to give me a ticket so we could go to court about it. You know, I mean, we've tried more polite ways. Don Lane has tried to mediate. The police are not interested in talking. In fact, they stopped going to those Mission Street Safety Task Force meetings. They only came when John Laird himself was there, you know, because they had to show respect to him. Otherwise, they would send Zach Friend, who seems like a perfectly nice guy, but he doesn't have any power to make decisions. So you know,
I like to think of him as our local Goebbels, sort of the minister of propaganda.
Whatever. I mean, the point is that he doesn't. It's not. He doesn't make decisions.
By the way, I've looked online looking for Howard Scarry's phone number. It is not available. Even his business phone number is not available. Just the general number of the police department, Zach Friend's number, and Captain Clark's number is available. For those who want to, shall we say, get in touch with Captain Clark, the number is 420-5847, 420-5847. There may be an answering machine. In fact, what we could do is we could call in to Captain Clark from the show and ask him that very simple question.
His email says he's out of town until Monday.
Well, there you are.
But we could call the police administration and try to get an answer.
We could. In fact,
seems like a reasonable question, right? I mean, if the police are in charge of public safety, it seems like they should – instruct cyclists about how to ride. And if we disagree with them, that could be good, you know, we could have a good discussion with them based on public safety, but they haven't answered me when I've asked them.
Well,
so that's about mission. So, but let's go to King, because I know a lot of people out there are thinking, you know, you really should, people should try not to ride mission. And I agree with that. And there's been some confusion among the general public that because we say that we have a right to ride mission safely, that we're encouraging people to ride mission. We're not. I want to discourage all the cyclists out there from riding mission. We should try not to ride it. However, like I said before, especially if you live on the west side, I lived a block from Bay and Mission for 10 years. My kid was born there on Palm Street. You have to ride mission for a block or two. I mean, even to get across Mission, you have to ride Mission for a block or two. If you're going to take the bike shuttle up to UCS, you have to ride Mission for a block or two. So the idea that no one will ever ride Mission is insane.
You can walk your bike. What's your problem there?
Okay, well, that gets down to the second-class citizen thing. You're right. You're right. I mean, maybe that's what the police are going to say. I think some of them said that to me privately. Like, we don't care about cyclists. We don't, you know, we don't have any rights to the road. Just walk your bike on the sidewalk. So, you know, I mean, if that's how people feel out there, then we have a basic struggle about a civil right and a mode of transportation. And it goes completely against the general plan of the city of Santa Cruz, against Caltrans directives, against, you know, all these other things the government's saying about helping cycling. And we have a legal right to ride mission.
What is that legal right? Where is it? Where is that to be found?
I don't know. But I know that I've talked about it. It's never been disputed. The city council said we've got a legal right to ride mission. Every street other than freeways in the state of California legally has to accept all modes of transportation. Oh, I know where the most recent way it was re-ratified was in a Caltrans directive called Complete the Streets, which says that every street in the state of California has, you know, should take all kinds of traffic. And any new construction that Caltrans is doing, they are now have an internal directive to put a bike facility and a pedestrian facility on it. So if Mission would be constructed now, reconstructed, there'd have to be a bike facility on it.
So
but that's a good question. I should try to get clear where that is. But I've pointed out several times, and Chief Scarry's agreed with me, which I appreciate, and, you know, Barisoni has agreed with us, which we appreciate, that we have a legal right to ride Mission. So given that we have a legal right to use the street, it would seem to behoove the police to help us identify how to use the street. But let's get away from Mission for a minute, because, like I said, I want to recommend to everyone that if you're going more than a block or two, try to stay off Mission. So if you're south of Mission, you can wind your way around Seaside and Acacia and California and all that. If you're north of Mission, your best option is King. Unfortunately, King carries 9,000 vehicles a day between Laurel and Bay, which is the most common place where cyclists need to ride it. So, and the drivers tend to be really respectful. There's speed bumps and all that. But to use King, you have to know how to be a vehicular cyclist. In other words, you have to take the lane. So there's two issues here. One is that the police, and I can talk about in a minute about the citation they're trying to give me. One is that the police also do not respect our right to take the lane on King. Now, on King, unlike Mission, it is quite safe to ride in the lane. A majority of drivers expect it. They're quite respectful. And you can't ride to the right because there's parked cars. And it's even worse than just always having parked cars. There's some parked cars and some not. So to stay to the right, you'd have to weave in and out of traffic, which is totally dangerous, right? So that's one thing about Mission, about King, is that we have the same issue with the police about taking the lane. The other thing about King is that there should be a preferred alternative for bikes. There should be a way where 8-year-olds can ride, 80-year-olds can ride. You shouldn't have to be a vehicular cyclist with the confidence to ride in front of 10 cars in order to ride your bike somewhere near Mission. And that's in the city's general plan, and that's something the city council has given a lot of lip service to over the years. And so we need to have, in addition to trying to have some bare-bone safety on Mission, we need to have an alternative. And the only real alternative, is King Street. So what the city council said, after these accidents happen, they said that they want to put an alternative to Mission on King. And everyone thought that'll never happen because the cyclists can't get together with the neighbors. We spent a year or two knocking on doors, talking to neighbors on King and all the surrounding streets. And we appear to have something that has, if not consensus, at least majority of support, which is a bike boulevard proposal. The neighbors love it because they're tired of King being arterial. They don't want 9,000 cars on the street. But remember, those 9,000 cars aren't just on King. They're on Laurel and they're on Walnut, and they're all driving all through the neighborhood to try to avoid Mission. So the neighbors have gotten together. There's a coalition called with King Street Neighbors, Escalona Street Neighbors. There was a public meeting held by Public Works, and the bike boulevard was twice as popular as any other alternative, including Do Nothing. But the Public Works Department refuses to take the next step, which is to draw up a plan to do the complicated diverter system that would make King into a bike boulevard, because it needs to be done carefully so that we don't mess up the neighborhood traffic flow or pour a bunch of cars down a neighborhood street, because that's not okay. We need to bring those through cars to Mission. So we've done a lot of work with the neighbors. We have a good coalition going on. Public Works refuses to do it. So City Council now twice has told Public Works to drop those plans. And to be honest, I'm not sure they're going to do it. I mean, it's a real problem with democracy where it's the staff is just out of control, you know. The staff is having a hard time with the budget cuts and all that, and in this particular case, they're using that as an excuse to not follow through with the democratic institution with what they're supposed to do. So this ride is on two counts. One is that the city is not helping us figure out a way to ride safety and taking any leadership in that, and secondly, that the city is not actively pursuing the obvious alternative for a safe route to Mission.
It's interesting. We're talking with Micah Posner, who's doing a bike ride along Mission on Sunday.
It's not just Mission, actually. We're only going
to
ride, I think, a mile on
and
Mission.
And King Street, I
Mission
say.
And King, right. So we're going to demonstrate. It's demonstration.
Actually, meant on King Street, but it's both King and Mission.
Yeah, we're going to demonstrate a safe way to ride Mission on the right-hand lane, and then we're going to demonstrate the alternative to Mission, which is King.
Right. This is interesting that your comments about the staff are interesting to me, because I've recently seen the staff ram through this medical marijuana dispensary moratorium, which actually requires 6 emergency votes out of 7 on the city council.
Wow.
And we, of course, have very stringent dispensary rules already. 2 new dispensaries asked to get involved. I'll be playing this later in the show. And the staff, apparently, you know, whatever our city manager wants, our city manager gets. And it's whatever Dick Wilson's will is, that's what goes down. Or his underlings, his minions, the people who are tenured. You know, they, I don't know if they're tenured, actually, but they seem to be there much longer and have much more power than ordinary city council members.
Right. I mean, I entirely agree. And I want to make it clear that when we talk about the Public Works Department, we're talking about people that ride, people that have been very friendly to cyclists. On their own initiative, they got a bridge over the river. I mean, we support them somewhat, but it was really their project. And so it's not that they hate cyclists, but, you know, when the community comes together and says that we have a solution for something, the staff need to go along with the will of the community, with the will of neighbors and cyclists together. Now, let me tell you why, in case you're not already upset, why the staff don't support a bike boulevard on King Street. The reason is, and it gets back to this
who's
issue.
Who's the head of the staff before you tell me that? Who's the person involved in me?
There's 2 Public Works staff members that are kind of do the planning and policy. The director is named Mark Dettel. The assistant director, who's in charge of traffic, is Chris Schneider. And he's been a great ally to bicyclists in the past. He's definitely has his own opinions, and in this case, he's refusing to go along with what the bicycle community and the neighbors want to do. Now, the reason that Chris and Mark, and it probably has something to do with Dick Wilson, I don't know for sure, the reason they're trying to stall and stonewall Bike Boulevard is because they have a vision of putting more development on the far west side, more automobile development on the far west side. And if they do, they want to run more cars down King, not less cars down King. They view King as another lane of Mission, and they want to shove more cars down King Street. In fact, one of their plans is to add a right turn lane onto King off of Mission near the bridge. And this is public. They've said, we don't want to do that because we don't want to put any more cars on Mission. We need to keep the, what do they call it, the vehicular volume steady, blah, 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 blah. So this is really comes down to a showdown between human safety and neighbor safety and trying to encourage development, automobile-based development. And I mean, People Power doesn't take a stance on development. I'm not saying development is or isn't good. But when it comes to whether you should prioritize human safety, I think development needs to take a back seat. I don't think it's okay to have more people killed on Mission and you know, possibly kids or other older people killed on King or injured on King. In fact, I know people have been injured on King on bicycle because you want to encourage development on the far west side. I don't think that's what the community wants, and I don't think that's good public policy.
Again, we're talking with Micah Posner. Phone call here if you want to call in. The number is easy, 427-3772. If you have questions for Micah, if you want to join this this bike ride on King and Mission at 11:30 on Sunday, 3 days from now, you can do so by going to what location?
We're meeting at the parking lot of Bayview Elementary, which is a few yards from the corner of Bay and Mission. If you go to the corner of Bay and Mission, we'll have some there with a sign.
We're providing bikes for the bike-challenged people who only have vehicles and don't know how to ride a bike, really?
If you need a bike for the ride, try going to the bike church tomorrow. It's open between 3 and 7.
And I mean, I know I actually was able to get a bike by going to, I guess, the Sub Rosa Cafe / bike church. Last time you did you had an event that was going to be this ride on King, but it turned into more of a sedentary activity because you didn't really have you need a certain minimum number of people to do this, right? Otherwise, it's risky.
Yeah.
Particularly because apparently the police are hostile or maybe hostile to this event.
Well, I think you need a critical mass of people for it to make sense.
Critical
to feel
mass.
Like a group
I've heard
ride.
That phrase somewhere before.
Yeah, I mean, you need enough people for it to feel like a group ride. It really doesn't. I feel like it's somewhat disrespectful to drivers if we have like six people and we ride abreast in the lane. It just doesn't make the point. I mean, we're not trying to inconvenience drivers. We're trying to demonstrate an efficient and safe way for cyclists to ride together as a group. So that's the nature of the ride. So if you care about these issues, please come to the ride. That is the way that we're going to change this because we do have friends in city council. We have been working hard. We do all the petitions and all that. But it ain't happening, so it's time to go to the streets. And we need you, if you're listening, to get out there on your bike to make this real.
11:30 at Band Mission on, I guess it's August 16th? Is
August
right?
16th, which is
Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, I would actually be out there in spite of my lack of skill and agility on a bike. But I'll luckily be in the studio doing my show at the time. Party. Actually, what you can do, though, is if you have a cell phone, I don't know if you use cell phones, yeah. Is call in from the bike ride and give us updates on free radio.
That's a great idea.
Letting
us
know Captain Clark's latest adventures.
Right, I don't think Captain Clark would be
Lieutenant
on vacation.
Clark? I'm not sure. Is it Captain Clark? Right. I guess it's Captain Clark.
Right, so if you're out there and you care about human rights, you care about human safety, you care about bicycle rights, come on in the street and join us on Sunday.
You know, it's also interesting, if you want to read more about this, I know you wrote a rather interesting, and there's some commentary too, interesting article on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Just go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and the top story does get into this at some length and gives some of the history. One thing you haven't talked about yet, and perhaps you don't want to talk about it, I mean, why antagonize our fine police department? I'm sure if you just keep a low profile, they won't give you any trouble.
No, we're not interested in low profile anymore.
I'm glad to hear that, actually, yeah. For all kinds of reasons. I think a high profile is quite appropriate when certain segments of the city are, and in this case, and I wanted to ask you about this, allowing manslaughter to go down. I mean, was there any thought of suing the city?
The families are suing the city, and that might explain why the city is behaving this way, but that's still not okay. You know, it's like the city still needs to put public safety over covering their asses for a lawsuit.
What an outrageous
In other words, it could
idea.
Be that John Barisoni was interpreting the vehicle code that way so as to cover the asses of the police report or because it's better for the suit. I don't know why he's doing it, but it's still not okay. You know, the fact that they're being sued, they're being sued, and if the plaintiffs win, it's because they poorly designed Mission. It should have a bike lane on it, you know?
And what has Spaghetti Man Don Lane? Is he going to be with you on this particular
He was on our last ride on King. He's definitely a cyclist and a member of People Power, and, you know, I think he's trying to help somewhat, you know, from the inside. And, I mean, because I'm in contact with them and I work with them and I do respect
the
council members as well as the city staff, people like Chris Schneider, I mean, I know the reasons why it's hard for them to act, but if you're listening, you got to prioritize human safety and common sense over whatever bureaucratic institutional reasons they have. And so, you know, yeah, they have their reasons, and they're not good enough.
Now, last time you did this, you got a citation from the police that was kind of done in a chicken shit fashion. It was done later.
Right.
And it was done not when the whole thing was going on, when the police would have had to publicly said,
right.
You know, you're a bad boy for not getting a permit. You had more than 100 people on the ride, and they claimed that was the reason that you needed to get a parading permit, something to
right.
that effect.
Well, before we get into police citations, and part of the reason we haven't talked about the citation that much is because I think it's unlikely if you come on the ride you'll get a citation, so I want to put that out there.
Right,
and
it may be likely that you,
I might get a citation,
right.
But that's you know, that's my deal. But if you're listening, you're thinking about going on the ride, the police have never cited anyone for riding in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because they know they'll lose in court. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Ken Foster, his business is Terra Nova, he rides everywhere. He was riding down Mission 3 or 4 months ago. A policeman stopped him, I don't know if it was city police or CHP, and hassled him for riding the lane. He said, give me a ticket because I want to go to court, you know, because you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And the policeman rode off on his motorcycle. And that's happened over and over again. They're not going to give a ticket for riding the lane. So what they did last time as a way to try to stop us from expressing our right to use the lane is they sent me a letter. The special events coordinator of the city sent me a letter, and I have another similar one for this ride, saying you need to get a permit to do this ride. So we contacted her back, and we said, okay, well, you know, what kind of permit do you want? And she said, well, either you can pay $4,000 for a parade permit, which, you know, to be fair to them, I mean, that's a little debatable about the last ride because we call it a parade. So, you know, people often pay $4,000 for parade permits. But let's stick to this ride. So I got a letter from her that says, you need to pay $4,000 to get a parade permit, or we'll give you a free non-commercial permit as long as you ride in the bike lanes or to the side of the street. Now, the reason we're having this ride is because there are no bike lanes, and it's deathly to ride on the side of the street. In fact, on King, it's not just dangerous to ride on the side of the street. It's impossible to ride on the street because there's cars parked on the side of the street. So,
would you consider doing a bike walk instead of a bike ride, Mike? What do you think of that idea?
Well, we met with the special events coordinator today, so People Power members, and we asked her, well, given that we want to express our freedom of speech and freedom of assembly about this issue, so we want to use these streets to have an activity, what do you recommend? And she said, well, maybe you could stand on the intersection with signs. So it's the same issue.
Sorry, yeah.
It's exactly the same as if you ask Captain Clark, how should you ride Mission? You know, it's exactly the same issue. They do not have a way for us to ride bikes on these streets, but they're unwilling to deal with that, despite the fact that in these neighborhoods, let me remind people, 10 to 20% of all trips are done by bicycle. We're talking about 100 kids or so riding to Mission Hill every day, hundreds of kids riding to Santa Cruz High, hundreds, if not 1,000 people riding to the University of Santa Cruz. We're talking about a huge, and I don't just mean it's kids. I mean, there's People Power members on every block of that street. We're talking about a huge bicycling population, and the city police and city staff have no way for us to ride, to use those streets, either on a daily basis or in an event.
Well, I'm going to ask you then what you're going to do when they come for you, Mike. In other words, when they show up and they say, okay, stop this ride. We want you to show your permit or else we're going to cite you for not having a permit.
Uh-huh.
What's your response? Do you have any planned response? Or are you just sort of hoping that's not going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's unlikely because it's never happened before. What the police did last time, as you referred to, I don't know if it's the police. I shouldn't say that. Could have been the city attorney or whoever. Like, you don't know where it comes from.
Did you talk to Captain Clark about it later, and he...
I didn't talk to him. He talked to the Sentinel. Anyways, I got a citation in the mail.
He made comments about it.
Right. I got a citation in the mail.
Uh-huh.
Now, I never signed to appear in court.
Mm-hmm.
So, and no one stopped the ride. In fact, we talked to the police of the ride. They gave us some suggestions on how to ride more safely. We took the suggestions. We want to respect their judgment.
But that wasn't good enough. They had to give you a ticket.
Yeah, then they sent me a ticket in the mail afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how much was the ticket?
$140, I think. I don't know, because I didn't pay it.
So you are a scofflaw. You've refused to pay your citation.
I'm not a scofflaw. I'm acting in accordance with the law. They had no right to refuse to issue a parade permit or to issue a ride permit, because if they're saying that we need a permit to have a group ride, they need to have a way to give us a permit to use whatever particular streets. Because that's a freedom of speech issue.
Have attorneys come up to help you with this case, by the way?
Well, I mean, until, you know, it's getting a little bit more and more, the police are acting in a way that's sort of upping the ante. And so I don't know that, I haven't gone to the courts about the ticket because I kind of felt like, I feel like this whole event ticket thing is really a ploy to stop us from exercising our right to use the street. So, and I know that's a way that activists get trapped, and it's probably happened to you, Robert, is that they get run around and round and round and round and round in circles in the court system. And this is a great example of how that could happen, because if I fight this ticket, it's going to be in traffic court, you know.
You can put it in a higher court.
You can?
Yeah. You dismiss the commissioner, and you say you want a judge. You preempt the judge. You do a peremptory challenge.
Okay. And that, because then it has legal precedent, so that might be good. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I have to say that... the judge didn't issue a warrant for this, probably because she thinks it's ridiculous. And so at the moment, I don't know, I just haven't paid it. And
well, it is an infraction, and the problem with infractions, as with homeless people, if you have three unattended infractions,
right,
of course, that's a misdemeanor,
right,
according to the city council's new merchant-backed law.
Right, I understand. And so if
you also can get your driver's license revoked, and if you're a driver at all, you can have your credit rating damaged if
right.
this stuff goes south for collection.
Right.
So there are some consequences. You might also get student loan aid fucked
right.
with. I'm not sure of all the details, but...
Well, I should probably be concentrating on taking care of myself in that way, and maybe we do need to go to court, and I don't know. But I kind of... The reason I haven't talked about it that much in public, this being an exception, I guess, because I'm just fed up, is it's really a distraction. I mean, it's really a harassment and a way to try to intimidate me personally and People Power so that we lay off and we don't express our right to use the lane. This is really about... What this is about... is safety, public safety, and a right for cyclists to use streets in the city in a safe manner. And when the Sentinel interviewed Captain Clark about this ridiculous, you know, ticket harassment, I appreciate Captain Clark and the reporter, because what he said was, we gave him a ticket because he took families and children out on King Street on a quiet Sunday and did a ride. So he admitted it's not about the permit thing or the not permit thing or the messing around with the permit thing. It's not even apparently about the money. According to Captain Clark, what it's about is he doesn't think that people should be out riding their bikes on the street in the lane, which is the only way to ride King Street.
Well, doesn't Captain Clark know best?
I don't think so. You know, and the reason I don't think so is because none of these people ride bicycles. Captain Clark doesn't ride a bicycle. Chief Scarry doesn't ride a bicycle. Dick Wilson doesn't ride a bicycle.
Kathy Agoni?
Kathy Agnon. I'm sure she's a well-meaning person, cares about public safety. She doesn't ride a bicycle.
You have to talk. So, you talk to some of our other commentators about Kathy and her work around the women's.
I like to presume that people have good intentions. But presuming they all have good intentions, they don't ride bicycles. And so it is terribly convenient, outrageously convenient, for them to say, you know, the safest way to ride a bicycle is on the right, when they don't ride bicycles. There is no cyclist. The head of the Traffic Safety Coalition, who's a county employee, says you should take the lane. The League of American Bicyclists, who train people to ride, they say you should take the lane. Ecology Action says you should take the lane. Even Caltrans said that's safer to take the lane. So these people who are trying to stop us from exercising our rights, Domitian and King, and who are trying to stop us from having a safe bicycle alternative, they don't ride bicycles. I mean, that's terribly convenient. And if you try to pin them down, I mean, I actually appreciate Kathy today for saying, well, maybe you should stand on corners with a sign, because it's at least close to being honest and saying, I have no idea, I don't give a shit, you're not, you know, I just go away. I mean, that's what it amounts to.
Yeah, Kathy is notorious for holding secret meetings of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, according to one of our guests who is looking at the extremely low rape closure rate that the Santa Cruz Police Department has. That was about a year ago. And we've gotten some bad reports on Kathy on a number of bases. And this also, I'm not trying to get personal, but I'm saying that staff members who have power in the city, a lot of power, can continue to essentially, at least we keep receiving complaints about rights abuses that are happening, which they're very insulated from any kind of accountability. They're insulated from any kind of meaningful pressure for change, and the city council seems to be running over, you know, tripping over its heels to do what they want. I mean, as I mentioned to you before, medical marijuana is something we thought the entire community agrees with, and yet they have decided they're going to allow the price to escalate in the next 10 months. They're not going to allow grow rooms. They're not going to allow new dispensaries. And they have no new evidence that indicates why this should be so, yet they're calling it an emergency because a couple of staff members don't want to process the applications. It's amazing, and we'll be playing this later in the show. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. We're talking with Micah Posner, who will be doing a ride tomorrow to try
to... Not tomorrow, Sunday.
I'm sorry, on Sunday, and actually at 11:30 on Sunday, to try to dramatize to those who are watching, and also to liberate those who feel that this needs to be brought forward and who need to do this. Safe ways to ride on Mission and King Streets, given the fatalities that have happened, given the intransigence of the city staff, given the failure of the city council to act to deal with the city staff. And is that accurate?
Yeah, it is accurate. And I'm glad you said liberate, because, you know, I'm upset and we all should be upset. And the ride's going to be fun, because it's really fun. There's going to be a ton of people. There's going to be a lot of mature, respectful, determined cyclists, including, you know, Ken Foster, I mentioned earlier. And the People Power Steering Committee.
Is it Bay and Mission, 11:30 on Sunday?
Bay and Mission, 11:30 on Sunday. And you will be in good company. And it will be fun, because it is liberating. It is powerful. This is sort of like a take back.
Will there be squirt guns?
I don't know. This is like it's like a take back the night march. You know, I mean, there's the society has gotten to this place where we're denied access to streets. I mean, You're denied access to King unless you're a confident, experienced cyclist, and you're denied access to Mission if you're anybody, no matter who you are. So by riding together, one of the great things about it, and I'm looking forward to seeing everyone there, is that you get to feel like you exist and you have power and you're legitimate. All these things which the police in this case and society in general seem to be trying to erode. So we're going to get together and have pride, have a good time, remember the people that have died and respect them, memorialize, you know, care about them, and just have a great ride. And it's not, we're gonna try to be very respectful to drivers and cause as little chaos to drivers as possible. We're only going to ride in the right-hand lane. We're not going to, you know, needlessly
no bike tricks on the road.
I hope not. That's not my intention, you know, because the really sad thing about the situation is the drivers are way ahead of the city. I mean, drivers on King are extremely respectful cyclists. For the most part, they don't mind that you take the lane. They understand that you need to do that, keep yourself safe. Drivers on Mission, most of them are respectful. The truck companies have been great. They've been trying to train their employees. I've had trucks go behind me on Mission lately. So what we have is a city staff that is totally regressive compared to society at large. And I'm talking about drivers. I'm appreciating drivers. I owe my life to drivers. I trust them with my life every day on the streets. And they are, a large majority of them, are very respectful and care about cyclists. So what we have is what should be the leadership of safety, which is the city staff, are the worst segments of the society. And not only are the worst segments in Santa Cruz, they're the worst in all of California. I've been getting calls from the California Bike Coalition, the California Bicycle Association of CBAC, there's two California bike groups anyways, and from the bike committee at Caltrans. I mean, the whole state is watching the staff of Santa Cruz be regressive, right-wing, and over-entitled with regard to the rights of bicyclists.
It's interesting. I mean, of course, the same thing is happening with respect to the rights of homeless people around such issues as the sleeping ban. Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, Richmond, all have eliminated their nighttime sleeping bans.
That's
Santa
awesome.
Cruz keeps its ban, even though you would think it's a much more liberal and progressive city.
Right. The people are.
Cities.
The people are. The drivers are, you know. And
but the staff, the city attorney, the tenured people, the folks in power apparently are not. That's often the case in cities like this, where the people have to take power again. What are you going to do when this ride is over? What's the next step? I mean, you have a great ride, or he says, great, we took it back, but the staff continues to ignore you. What then?
Well, we have made some progress both on Mission and King, you know, but it's been in some ways despite the staff. I mean, I feel like Public Works was somewhat helpful on Mission, actually. I should say that because it was the police and the city manager and the city attorney that tried to stop the signs that Caltrans wanted to put up, and they created a compromise, so there are signs on Mission, and they're pretty good signs. I think they're helpful. They're not as good as they could have been, but they're pretty good. They show a bike riding in the lane in front of a car, and if you're riding a Mission, you should point to those signs. So that's a partial victory.
You're going to put up your own signs, perhaps?
Well, you know, we were going to, but I actually think that those signs are pretty descriptive. I mean, they got watered down a little bit for no good reason, but...
How were they watered down?
Well, they were going to say bikes allowed full use of lane. Instead, they show a picture of a bike taking lane, and they say bikes in the lane. And the idea of the city council was, well, that pretty much says it, which I agree, and we don't want to bum out, you know, Chief Scary or whatever. Well, that was the city council.
I mean, who cares if a few people die? Don't bum out Chief Scary.
Well, to be fair to them, I think that those are pretty descriptive signs, and I think that we should be
pointing to them. But it wasn't the sign you requested, however.
It wasn't the sign we requested, which would have been okay. I mean, it's okay to not get everything you want if the police would then enter into a dialogue and take leadership about what a safe way is to ride Mission. But to me the problem is not that we disagree or that they don't want a particular sign, it's that they are showing absolutely no responsibility for our safety on Mission. So, but I want to point out the Public Works work was somewhat helpful, and thanks to the Public Works Department, the City Council, and Caltrans, we got some pretty good signs on Mission. So, and with regard to King, the City Council and the City's Transportation Commission have really tried to be helpful. At their last meeting about the issue, the City Council directed staff to go ahead and prepare a plan for diverters and a bike boulevard on King. And then they asked the staff, how long is it going to take you, or when can you get around to this? And the staff said, never. So the city council said, well, you can sit on your hands for a year, but then you got to do it. And I don't appreciate that they gave them a year, but what's more important to me, I mean, if the city staff would have answered the council and said, all right, you got it, we're on board, we understand, we work for the city, we understand it's a democracy, we're going to get this done, you know, a year delay in the way government
goes.
They
actually said never?
First, they said never.
They actually used the word never.
No, they said, I cannot foresee a time in which we'll have the staff to accomplish this.
I see. Is this some huge project? I mean, does it take all kinds of manpower?
No way. No.
How many hours does it take to get this job done?
I have that at my office. I have it written down.
Give me an estimate. 1,000 hours, 100 hours, 5 hours.
100 hours.
100 hours. So
2.5 weeks.
What you should do is contract this sucker out to a private group.
Well, that's mostly, that is what we're requesting. We're not requesting that the staff draw up the bike boulevard. All the staff has to do, which will take them about 100 hours, is to hire a consultant, work with the consultant, and there are several good bike consultants to draw up this plan for the bike boulevard. So no one's asking the staff to do the work
themselves. We'd rather spend $200,000 for a diesel consultant, I think. That would be more appropriate to... Right.
People are, well, that's related to development again. You know, I mean, it just shows you what their real concerns are. You know, you need a desal plant so you build more stuff on the west side so you can attract more cars down King Street. But in the meantime, you know, who cares if the neighbors are upset and the bicyclists don't like putting more cars down King Street?
Not to mention Camp Dresser and McKee, the main people who are doing it, who are allegedly profiteering in Afghanistan and Iraq. But
right.
That's a whole other story.
So I don't mean to say that no one's been helpful. I mean, the Public Works was helpful on Mission. John Laird was helpful. The City Council was helpful because they told them they need to do it. What I am saying, and the reason we need to go to the street, is that it's not getting done. It's not happening. And we need to keep standing up and demanding respect for human
life.
Your
next step,
until
again,
something
I
happens.
Asked you, and you went through this rigmarole, what's the next step after? If nothing happens, what do you do then?
Well, the reason I would
hire your own consultant and get the work done yourselves?
Well, the reason I went through the rigmarole is... there is every potential it is happening. It's just that we don't know. You know what I mean? Like we're going to keep pushing it. We're going to keep having more rides. We're going to keep electing city council members that are friendly to bicyclists. We're going to keep going to public meetings. We're going to keep doing petitions. We're going to keep going door-to-door in the neighborhood until we get a bike boulevard on King.
Yeah,
and
it seems to me like you reached a certain point of threshold where you said, this is not happening. Therefore, let's have a bike ride here. And that's why you're arranging this. And this is, of course, a form of publicity. But as I notice, we're not getting too many phone calls. 427-3772, by the way. For all you listeners, you're listening to Micah Posner of People Power. He's going to be doing a bike ride on Mission and King to train the police how not to interfere and how to be helpful, and train the community how to continue being helpful, and train the staff how to do their job in actually getting together a bike boulevard plan for King Street.
I don't know if those are really goals. I think that, just to get back to the fun part, I mean, hopefully that will come out of this, but I don't know that I have the capability to train anyone.
And have a good ride as well.
Yeah, it's to demonstrate safe ways to ride Mission and King.
Is it true you're going to burn Dick Wilson in effigy at the end of this?
Absolutely not.
Well, I would hope not. I mean, it should be so incredible disrespect for our $200,000-plus a year, salary and wages
he's,
guy.
He's probably a nice guy and a great neighbor.
Oh,
and
a great guy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As I'm sure is as Obama and perhaps a Dick Cheney as well. Right. I hear he's a very good duck hunter. That's what I've heard.
Well, I probably wouldn't go hunting with
him.
Well,
you got to watch
out. He'd probably be a great neighbor. I mean, it's not none of these. You know, these people are in this system, this car-based infrastructure, which is all centered around development. It's not that any of them are bad people. I mean, in fact, a lot of them ride bikes. Like
all
I
right.
said
we
before,
we can cut off the apologies for the how good of people they really are.
It's not an apology. What it is it's a call to stand up against the system itself.
So you don't have anything planned for the next step if you get absolutely no response other than doing what you've done before. Petitions.
Which is working, actually. I mean, the city council has, in a weak way, told the staff to do this. Caltrans did put up signs. We're pursuing it with the state of California. We're talking about going to the attorney general for an opinion about using the lanes. We're reaching out to other statewide groups. I mean, it is working. And the reason we should go to the street is because we need to tell our city that it's not okay to slowly, a little bit, sort of try to deal with the political system. They need to do something.
You're telling the city, and again, I ask you, and you've got no new answer for me other than it's already happening, which seems to be contradictory because it's already happening. Why bother to go to the streets? You know, you have no next step, it sounds like, which, you know, I don't always have a next step either in what I do. So it's not sometimes easy to come up with a next step, though it's often helpful to be able to say at the end of, in the middle of your upcoming ride, there'll be something happening in 3 weeks if we don't get a response in the next month or in the next 2 months. In other words, if you have some step.
To be honest, it's probably a response in the next year. The next year, we need to see that this...
You're going to wait for a year and find out.
Well, we're not going to wait. We're going to keep working with neighbors. We're going to keep going to city council meetings.
There will be no firebombings until next year, is it?
There's never going to be firebombings. We don't need to firebomb anyone.
Well, there is a fire, by the way, blazing, for those who are interested. It is actually rolling. It has been going for about a day. We're talking with Micah Posner, and I also want to, there'll be another report on the actual situation with the fire up in, it's not in Davenport, but it's up on the ridge and on the hillside. It's called the Lockheed Bonnie Doon Fire. It's crossed Empire Grade Road, headed south and west, according to our latest report from Dennis about an hour ago. We'll be getting another report probably in about an hour on Dennis' show From the Cream to the Dregs. Michael, let me give you a chance to sum up and, again, invite people to come to your 11:30 Take Back Mission and King, and encourage the city staff to do the right thing and have a good time while we're at it. That's 11:30 on Sunday, starting at Mission and Bay Streets. And also, I encourage you to have a cell phone and call free radio and keep us abreast of, you know, all the wonderful sights you're seeing, all the kids cheering, police throwing their hats up in the air, Dick Wilson doing a medicine dance, whatever else is happening. It'll be great, I'm sure.
It might be really fun like that. I mean, if you follow what happened at Critical Mass in San Francisco, you know, Willie Brown and a lot of the different segments of the city staff were totally upset about the Critical Mass, and that is what happened. I mean, if you do live on King Street or Mission Street, please do come out and wave a flag or offer to give us water or, you know, whatever it is like that. I mean, we are doing it as a memorial because two cyclists got killed, but it's also an empowering, fun event, a liberating event for cyclists that we don't have to live in fear. We can take charge of our own safety on our own streets and ride in mass. So please join us both to think about people who have died, to demand better conditions, and to empower yourself and enjoy your community on Sunday at 11:30. The ride leaves at 12 o'clock sharp. We're meeting at Bayview School, which is pretty much right at the corner of Bay and Mission. Well, it's an easy ride. It'll be about an hour long. So come on out.
And please give us a report on how that's going. I will be in the studio eating tuna fish sandwiches or something pretty exciting.
Right. I'll probably be a little busy, but I'll try to see if other people can call in.
That'd be good.
Maybe, you know, Coral, maybe you want to call in. I hope you're coming on the ride. You're an awesome,
Coral Broom, one of our free radio broadcasters, and a Huff member, not a Metro Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression member. That's SAFE, a group of musicians on the street.
Coral fits our group of cyclists who are determined and respectful. And that's what I would suggest. Maybe if you wouldn't mind calling in, that'd probably be a good way to do it.
And again, last chance to give any questions to Micah, 427-3772. Otherwise, we'll assume we're not reaching anybody, and the whole thing is ridiculous, and we're all going home.
Well, going home either way.
Actually, he's going home either way. I'll be here, so you can continue to not call me, but you can no longer insult Micah by not calling him. He's leaving the studio.
All right, see you on Sunday.
Thanks, Micah, and I will certainly hear from you, hopefully, or hear from you, Coral, on Sunday. Maybe we can get somewhere with that. Let's turn to a little music, and I'll be back with more of the usual Bathroom Spears Broadsides Fair, which has to do with civil rights downtown, street interviews, and weird involvements with the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Dark and strong, farewell to thee. MacPherson's song will not be long upon the gallows tree. Say rantingly, say wantonly, say dauntingly, play me. He played a tune and he danced thereon below the gallows tree.
My mother know when first she cradled me that I would become a roving boy and die on the gallows tree.
Say rantingly, say wantonly, say dauntingly, play thee. He played a tune and he danced thereon below the gallows. Untie these bands from off my hands and give to me my bow. I'm not to leave my brave Scotland but a tune before I go. Say rantingly, say wantonly, say dauntingly, play me. He played a tune and he danced in a room below the gallows tree.
Some come here to see me hang, and some to steal my fiddle. But before that I do part with her, I'll
He played a tune and he danced it around below the gallows tree. He played a tune and he danced it around and they hanged him to the tree.
Yeah, that was the Weavers from way back when. Name of the song was Below the Gallows Tree. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. You're listening to Robert Norse. And we have about an hour to go before it's going to be music time and environmental information time and fire update time with Uncle Dennis, if he has an update. We'll see if that actually comes about. I'm going to go right into some of the interviews now, though, because that's what I often do. And if I don't do it, I get too many interviews, and I get way behind, and it just get all frantic, and people get cranky because I tell them they're going on the air. So let's listen to an interview or two or three or four. And if you've got comments of your own, I'm very interested in hearing them, particularly since nobody has called in. 427-3772. If you'd like to call in, have any comments, any thoughts, if you have a PSA for us, or if you have money for us, or you have questions for us generally, not just my show but other shows, the number to call is the voicemail line, 427-4523, 427-4523. But again, the number to call for this show is 427-3772. And, of course, you can also go to the Internet and go to www.freakradio.org, which is where we stream and where you can also download an application, get more information and schedules, and just generally learn more about Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You masterminded that.
Well, there were a lot of masters and very few minds.
Well, I was in on that shit.
So here we are downtown at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific. It's about 10 to 9, amen. And B.O.B., you say that there has been a new action from Ranger, Chief Ranger John Wallace?
Yes, sir.
What's that about?
Well, this morning we woke up kind of early. I had some money, and I woke up all my campmates so that we could go to Denny's. And I made it up on the top of the hill before anybody else did. And he just started driving by, and then they were walking up, so then...
Where was this?
On the levee by Long's.
Okay.
So they start walking up, and Ranger Wallace stops, and then he runs down the hill, and he makes them show everybody where, like, he makes them show him where the camp was.
How many people were involved with this?
Usually, we sleep in numbers, so there's more safe, so there's probably like 8 to 10 people sleeping at my camp.
And Ranger, just upset Ranger Wallace.
Yeah, so he went down there, and yeah, there's a little litter, because there's always going to be litter where you can't, like water or food or whatever. So they all come
you
back
didn't
up.
Clean up your campsite.
No, because we went to go get breakfast. Usually I always clean up this campsite, but after breakfast first.
Okay.
So they come up, and he said that he was going to give everybody a ticket except for me, my friend Jeff, and my friend Andre, because we were already on top of the hill when he came up. So then he was about to give everybody a littering ticket. So then I was like, hey, what if it's my stuff? And then he's like, so is that your litter? I was like, okay, yeah, it's my litter. I'll take a ticket for everybody. So everybody walks off because he told them to leave. And then me and Ranger Wallace starts talking, and I was like, hey, I clean up my camp every day. I haven't had a run-in with you for a long time. He's like, you know what? Tickets don't really mean shit. So I'm just going to go talk to Bob Lee and get a stay-away order for you guys. It might take a long time, but I'm going to get a stay-away order from you guys ever stepping foot on a recreational place.
It sounds like big talk to me.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you could try. It might be a long process, but... And if he does that, it's against my constitutional rights to be anywhere.
Well, and use public spaces, yeah.
And he actually told me today that the people with houses, the homeless, do not have rights because they can make up new laws and everything and fuck us over every single day.
Well, that's how he likes to regard the homeless, but that isn't actually the way it is with the Constitution. Although, you got to get a lawyer and, you know, you got to prove all that shit. However, usually they can only get a stay-away order if you're convicted of crimes, usually misdemeanors. And then they'll say, as a condition of your probation,
Here's a stay away order. He said before that he's done it with somebody else.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe we should interview Ranger Wallace. Where do you intend to sleep tonight?
The same spot.
My goodness, you scofflaw, you. And where you, is everybody sleeping illegally here tonight? Is that what's going on? What about you, madam?
Probably. Will you come talk to me later?
Yeah, sure, we'll do. All right, any reports from the street, guys? Anything you want to say for free radio?
Yeah, the cops...
Before we get into that, I think I have somebody on the phone who's actually patiently waiting. Can you hear me, caller? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. So why don't you sign in there? Because you're an old, familiar voice to those who are really have a long memories.
Yeah, this is Larry Hildes, formerly of Berkeley, California, now Bellingham, Washington.
So you're up in Bellingham, Larry. You are an attorney. Of course, I remember you from your days defending homeless people here in Santa Cruz against the Rotkin injunction of 1996.
Oh, yes.
And now you're up there defending the men and women who are resisting our patriotic attempt to provide new desolation in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran.
Exactly.
So actually tell us what you've been doing up in Bellingham, Washington, and why we should give a shit.
Well, most of it's actually been Olympia and Tacoma, Washington. We're representing the folks who do blockades of military shipments in and out of the public ports of Olympia and Tacoma.
Oh.
Because when a lot of the anti-war movement has gone to sleep in a lot of places, our folks do not, as someone referred to it up here, drink the Obama Kool-Aid and have not stopped. And they've been very effective through nonviolent direct action.
I got to tell you, Larry, you're fading in and out on your call here. What, maybe your phone? Are you on a cell phone or something?
I'm in that meeting.
Sorry.
Sorry.
It's really hard to hear you because you are kind of, you know. All right.
Let me see what I can do.
All righty.
Let me find a stationary spot. Okay.
Okay, and also you sound like you're whispering. Are you? Is this a secret? Or are you going to tell us what's really happening?
No, I'm telling you. I'm outside of a meeting that I came out of to talk to you for a while.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, as I understand it, you know, Bellingham or Tacoma, Olympia, what you will, up there in Washington State is one of the few places where there's actually been active interference with the provision of lethal weaponry to U.S. occupiers abroad who are visually engaged in routinely murdering people in Iraq and Pakistan and Afghanistan. Am I right here?
That's exactly right.
And so what? First of all, what's been happening up there? And then secondly, what role do you have here?
Well, our folks have done a series of nonviolent direct actions and legal protests starting in May of 2006. The gate of the Port of Olympia and then various ports since then, and have managed to stop military shipments for greater or shorter periods of time. In fact, now they're shipping out of places like Beaumont, Texas, and San Diego to avoid dealing with our clients. And whatever the government's thrown at them, they've come up with a new tactic, and they've kept going, opposing both, well, all of them, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, consistently throughout the last 3 years plus. And we've been busy. They get arrested a lot, sometimes legally, lots of times illegally. And we've now got a couple of civil suits that we're doing in federal court based on some of the illegal arrests and some of the spying, which we're just now getting a lot of the details on. But very consistently, every time there's a shipment, our folks are there to try and shut it down.
When was the last time that happened?
In May of this year.
And this is Stryker Brigade stuff? Or?
Yeah, Stryker Brigade's going in and out, in this case, of the Port of Tacoma. And they stopped using the Port of Olympia because the county refused to provide law enforcement anymore. The city refused to provide. They didn't want to pay for it. So they've been trying the Port of Tacoma. Tacoma police have made it extremely difficult to protest at the port. At one point, they were arresting people for trespass for being in public streets, claiming they were on the other side of the fence than they were, and for refusing to give their names. They actually arrested one of the lawyers that way. So when they made it impossible to demonstrate at the port, our folks went to the freeway ramp so the equipment couldn't get in and out of Fort Lewis. When the MPs blocked the freeway ramps, our folks blocked the freeway. And it's gone on that way for several years with extreme effectiveness, and regardless of the rhetoric of the administration, our folks have kept on opposing these wars and continue to do so.
Now, wait a minute. Don't they trust Obama? He's the one who's brought the audacity of hope.
Well, yeah, unless you actually listen to what he's saying or watch what he's doing, and then there's not so much hope.
Well, are you suggesting that doubling the troops in Afghanistan is hopeless?
Yes.
Well, how about drone bombings in Pakistan? Is that supposed to be provocative and murdering civilians?
Yeah.
Or maintaining 130,000 troops in Iraq isn't withdrawing? Is that what you're saying?
That's pretty much exactly
what we're saying. Oh, goodness. You know, what kind of a man are you, Hildas? So, how effective has this been? I guess, let me ask you this. How many people are more and more people joining this struggle, or are more and more people getting burned out, or both?
Well, it cycles. But there's several dozen active at any given time. And it's amazing. If you have several dozen people blocking streets, you don't have convoys moving. At one point in November of 07, our folks shut down the main street in and off the freeway in Olympia for 17 hours. And there were no convoys that moved. Never heard of a demonstration where they were that effective for that long. And the cops came in and brutalized them, and they left.
Did they?
And then immediately came back and shut it down for another 12 hours. And a set of shipments that were supposed to take them 3 days took them 3 weeks, and some of it never went at all.
And is there anywhere else in the country where this is being done?
Well, there's been local groups that they've worked with. There have been some actions on Staten Island, New York, and Baltimore and New Orleans. But mainly it's been Olympia, Tacoma, Aberdeen, places up here. And hopefully now Beaumont, Texas, where the latest equipment for the next Striker Brigade to go out just went out. The equipment goes out a month to two months ahead of the brigade going out. If the equipment doesn't go out, troops can't go out.
Now, what is a Striker Brigade? It sounds like some sort of a union stoppage or something.
No. Strikers are basically modified tanks. They're modified to be maneuverable so they can drive them up and down city streets, which is what you want to do with an occupying army. You want to run them right through the middle of town to show that you're in charge and to shoot anybody who gets in your way. So they're very much a weapon of intimidation and control.
Any fatalities?
And whole brigades of these.
Huh. Any fatalities yourself among the protesters, or any serious injuries?
Well, there've been a lot of injuries. Mostly it's been minor. Had a vet who was tased 3 times in Tacoma, but survived. So far, in that way, folks have been lucky. And there have been no felonies, very few convictions at all. We being all the lawyers who are doing these cases, have been pretty successful at winning most of them. Sometimes because they screw up, and sometimes just because we beat them. But and that's helped. That's helped keep things going, is that people are not in jail, and they're not physically injured, and so they're able to keep going.
SDS involved in much of this, the new SDS?
Yeah, SDS is definitely involved. There's an SDS chapter in Olympia, SDS chapter in Tacoma.
This is the Students for a Democratic Society that is sort of it actually isn't the same organization as the 1962 Port Huron statement. I take Tom Hayden has not come up to block any vehicles recently.
No. Last I checked, Tom Hayden was still working with the Democrats.
Yes. What about what do the local politicians and what do the local newspapers think of the activities of your clients and your sympathizers?
Well, the Olympian has run a long series of they're their articles are actually pretty good, but their editorial stance has been throw them all in jail consistently. In fact, they demanded prosecutions. And when we beat the city and most of theirs, they demanded that the county file immediately, and the county responded the next day by going after 26 people who had done, who hadn't actually done an action. They had done, they had been standing in the street, there was nothing to block, and they were arrested in advance because of information about what they might be intending to do, which is the first time we've gotten a positive editorial out of the Olympian was over the spying that's just recently come up.
And that, of course, is now your claim to fame and how I heard of you again, because you showed up on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, who has showed up in our studio as well, though I might add has not invited me out to dinner, sadly enough. But, you you know, this is the issue. I mean, of course, you know, it always seems to me a sort of a convoluted secondary or tertiary issue about, you know, finding that you had some clown who was spying. I mean, why the hell wouldn't you find some clown spying in the middle of a peaceful group? I mean, we had the same kind of problem here in Santa Cruz in 2005-06, and, you know, we had the police department actively spying on nonviolent protesters who were planning a peaceful, although anarchistic, if you think of the that horrible word, parade for New Year's Eve, calling a DIY do-it-yourself parade. For those who are interested, of course, it's I guess Amy Goodman two or three Fridays ago had you on, right?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago, Tuesday.
And again, I mean, if you want to summarize what that's about, do so, although, frankly, I regard what you're talking about now as being more important than that, but maybe it isn't. Give us a summary.
I agree with you. I agree that the action, the activism is the most important thing, but our folks caught a Navy or an Army intelligence officer who had infiltrated the group. He had come to them claiming to be an anarchist and befriended a bunch of people, ended up co-administering the listserv, the internal listserv for the group, and very close to a bunch of people. And they got some documents in the Public Records Act request where the name of this person at the Army doing a force protection assessment. They do daily reports that are supposed to be on the military strength of the enemy. In this case, the enemy is a group of nonviolent activists. And most of them, his name was blacked out. They got one where the material was blacked out, and his name wasn't.
Oops.
Yeah. And then got a bunch of emails from the city of Olympia, from the police who we knew were in contact with whoever was spying, and there was his name. And someone said, wait a minute, that sounds a lot like our friend John Jacob. Man's name is John Jacob Towery II, and he didn't give his last name. He used his first and his middle name. And they did a check for voter registration, and it was the same address that John Jacob had told them he lived in Spanaway, Washington. And they found a Facebook page, and there on the Facebook page was a picture of John Jacob Towery, and it was the same guy. So to our knowledge, it's the first time the military has actually been caught infiltrating a peace group in the U.S. directly. Local cops have been caught, feds have been caught, but the military hasn't gotten caught. We don't think it's the first time they've done it, but it's the first time they appear to have been caught.
You mean the first time in history, or the first time in the decade, or...
Well, as far as anyone can tell, the first time in history, but I'd be surprised.
You
know, it's not the first time.
Of course, he hasn't been prosecuted. He probably still has his job, right? And then you have some secondary infiltrator proceeding to do what he was doing before he was exposed, right?
Probably. But the Army says they're doing an investigation. We're going to do dismissal motions. We've got a bunch of cases that were filed based on his information. So we're going to try and get rid of those, and then we're looking at what will follow.
Now, this is not the Stryker Brigade people that he was infiltrating, right?
No. This is the folks doing the peaceful demonstrations, the nonviolent activism, and occasional blockades.
Well, what I mean to say, this was the people who were blocking the Stryker Brigade equipment.
Well, some of them,
yeah.
But he worked his way into several different groups.
Now, does this have implications in terms of overturning prosecutions or screwing up their cases?
Oh, yeah. We have 26 women who were charged from a women's action that never actually happened. They were sitting around in an empty street with signs in front of a closed gate with nothing behind that gate. They were arrested because the police were told by this infiltrator that folks were intending to blockade convoys that had not come out, that weren't even visible. So they were charged with attempted disorderly conduct because they hadn't actually done anything. And how did they know they had the intent? Because of the infiltrator. So we're going to move to dismiss those. We have a couple cases that are supposed to come to trial in Tacoma in a week and a half on disorderly conduct. We're going to move to dismiss those. We got another set from outside Fort Lewis where folks got arrested on the on-ramp to I-5 by MPs who were tipped off that the demonstrators were coming. MPs aren't supposed to be arresting civilians off military bases. They're not supposed to be doing anything off military bases.
Well, wait a minute. It's good training for those MPs.
That's nice. Law says they're not supposed to be dealing with civilians. So it has those. Then we have cases where there are convictions from other things where we're now going back to look at whether or not we need to move to reopen those because of this. There are people who we know have been targeted repeatedly. And we want to look at whether or not those convictions should be thrown out. So, I think it's got a lot of that. And then we're going to look at civil. We're going to look at suing.
Suing them and getting some actual return. Now, let me ask you, are you... we're talking with Larry Hildes, who's a civil rights attorney both in previously in Berkeley, actually at one time in Santa Cruz, or came down, and he actually defended some rapscallion food server in a San Francisco jail at one time, as I understand it. And then more recently, you're defending... you're famous recently. Oh, I resent the fame of other people. I can't stand it. You're famous for being part of the legal team that uncovered this military infiltrator in a peaceful group, and you've also been defending one of the few situations in the United States where people are actively opposing in ways that actually risk their liberty this murderous equipment that's going overseas to support the U.S. imperialist occupation of foreign countries, which is a very bad idea, I want to point out. Blocking it is a good idea. Sending those troops over there and murdering people abroad is not the best approach. Now, Larry, you've also been involved in numerous other activities in the last dozen years. I know you were up in, I guess you're up in the Redwoods. Defending what? People who are trying to save the Redwoods, right?
Right, yeah. Back in the 90s, mostly, in early this century.
This is pro bono, what you're doing, or you're actually getting paid for all this?
Most of the time we're getting paid something, not necessarily a lot. But these days, pretty much everybody pays.
Or did you marry a rich partner? What's going on here, Larry?
No, she works for me. So.
Oh, I see. So you've enslaved some poor woman here. I talked to Karen earlier. I think I met her. You may have introduced me to her at one time. You actually used to be in a Berkeley office where there were several attorneys engaged in civil rights legislation against abusive authority in Berkeley that were going after homeless people and political activists. What's happening? Have you done anything like that recently? I know Seattle was the center where it all began. They started passing the infamous roulette decision happened up in Seattle, which declared that it's okay to start banning people from 95% of the sidewalk and stop them from panhandling on 95% of the sidewalk because it's a so-called time, place, and manner restriction, which is content neutral. And therefore,
right,
it's okay to start giving police huge amounts of power, as they do in Santa Cruz, to tell a person you can't have a sign up after dark that says need food, which is illegal in Santa Cruz now.
And actually, it's been better up here mostly, although we've been giving some legal support to Nicholsville, which is a tent city that's specifically of mostly homeless folks, done as a protest against the mayor and gentrification and lack of services for the homeless.
You have a mayor named Nichols?
We have a mayor named Nichols.
And is he worth a nickel? Probably not in this matter.
I don't think so.
Because Obamaville, how can they be far behind, you know?
Yeah, at this point, I think Obamaville's would be well taken.
So it sounds like you're trying to do, as usual, three or four things at once, Larry. I'll say hello to Pat Ring and Sandy down here,
yeah.
If I see them.
Oh, wow.
From olden times, Pat Ring is still works regularly at the Poet and Patriot, in case you happen to wander into town. These are activists, for those who don't know, who supported Dragonstar Dan Hopkins and shit-kicker Sean Alimi back in 1996 at an eight-month-long City Hall protest, which Mayor Mike Rotkin tried to have declared illegal, even though, as I remember, the activists made it, strangely enough, a big point not to sleep at night, and because they were trying to be legal. That was one of their approaches. I guess it's the sort of how crazy can you get trying to follow the law in Santa Cruz? You sleep during the day, you stay up all night. You know, I guess you've got to talk to some well-positioned meth sellers to really be able to maintain your energy as the, you know, you go to 3 and 4 a.m. So, Larry, is there anything more you want to pass on about what's happening up there? How can people get more information about what's going on with how to resist the U.S. occupation abroad and at the same time hopefully not be sent to Guantanamo as an enemy combatant? I know, it's going to be closed. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Olympia Movement for Justice and Peace has a website with a link to Port Militarization Resistance, and I think it's omjp.org.
omjp.org?
Yeah. Also, if you Google Olympia and spying on the Internet, you will find tons and tons and tons of stuff about what's been going on.
Right, but I guess that would also give you, we'll let instruct people as to how to stop the Iraqi war.
It'll instruct people about what's going on. I think the tactics are very transferable and very appropriate. Otherwise, I think be out in the streets. It's been very hard. A lot of people went to sleep when Obama got elected. People who knew better didn't, but...
They don't know better yet, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, the demonstrations have still been very, very small nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And that means to change. You have to remember that.
You there? Hello? I think we've lost you, Larry.
Oh, okay.
All right, now we got you again.
Okay.
Well, listen, Larry, we're talking with Larry Hildes. If you want to, again, you want to check out what he's been doing, www.omjp.org. And I guess thank you for taking the time to call in.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Larry. We don't call him Laughing Larry Hildes for nothing. Thanks a lot, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open. Actually, they were open before, but they're still open. 427-3772 is the call-in number. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM on the radio dial. It seems actually like an appropriate moment to read a little story here from Counterpunch, which I think is kind of interesting. You may remember that, for those of you who have been reading the paper, if I can get this computer to work, Representative or Misrepresentative sellout Sam Farr was holding a town meeting on Tuesday night, and there was some hubbub because some people were denouncing his health care plan as socialist and Nazi, and others were wondering where the hell is the single-payer plan that actually might make some difference. Here's an interesting article. By the way, Farr, who I've had some positive things to say about, but not much recently, I've recently been pointing out that as of 2 weeks ago, he voted in favor of the biggest military budget in history. And as far as I'm concerned, instead of voting with the 30 people in the House of Representatives who voted against it, he joined the Obamacrats or the Abominations or what do you want to call this new singing group that's running the country. Here's an article called Hecklers Unite, Why Aren't Progressives Disrupting Obamacare Town Halls by Dave Lindorf.
Many progressives are getting all bent out of shape over the brown shirt rabble, quote-unquote brown shirt, organized by health industry PR firms to disrupt the so-called town meetings being organized all over the country by Democratic members of Congress. What they're conveniently forgetting, as soon as I get back to this article, I will tell you what they're conveniently forgetting. Let's see here. This is it. What they are conveniently forgetting is that these are not really town meetings at all, at least in the sense of the town meetings I grew up with and started out covering as a young journalist in Connecticut. That is, meetings called and run democratically with leaders elected from the floor, open to all residents of a community. These so-called town meetings, which Obama's gang is running, are really nothing but propaganda sessions run by members of Congress who are trying to burnish their fraudulent credentials as public servants and trying to perpetrate a huge fraud of a health care bill that purports to be a progressive reform of the U.S. health care system, but that actually further entrenches the control of that system by the insurance industry and, to a lesser extent, the hospital and drug industry. Obamacare is to health reform what bank bailouts are to financial system reform, which is to say the opposite of what its name implies. The right-wing nuts who cry that Obamacare is introducing euthanasia for the elderly infirm or that it is socialism are ignorant wackos, to be sure, but they are right about one thing. Americans are about to be royally screwed on health care reform by the president and the Democratic Congress, just as they've been screwed by them on the financial system reform. The appropriate response to this screw job is the one the right has adopted. Shut these sham town meetings down and run the sellout politicians out of town on a rail, preferably coated in tar and feathers, the way the snake oil salesmen of old used to be handled. This is not about civil discourse. This is about propaganda. The Obama administration and the Democratic congressional leadership have sold out health care reform for the tainted coin of the medical industrial industry and are holding or trying to hold these meetings around the country to promote legislation that has essentially been written for them by that industry, legislation that will force everyone to pay for insurance as offered and priced by the private insurance industry. What a deal for those companies. A captive market of 300 million people. There will be little or no effort to control prices, and the higher costs will be financed through higher taxes and through cuts in Medicare benefits. This isn't reform. It's corruption, pure and simple. Any mention of a system that works, single payer, the system we've already have in the form of Medicare for the elderly and disabled, and the system that has proved successful for almost four decades in Canada, has been systematically blocked and censored out of the discussion. Every effort has been made to bury an excellent bill, H.R. 676, offered up by Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, which would cover every American by simply expanding Medicare to cover everyone. The only proper response at this point is obstruction, and the more militant and boisterous that obstruction, the better. Instead of opposing the right-wing hecklers at these events, progressives should be making common cause with them. Instead of calling them fascists, we should be working to turn them by showing them that the enemy is not the left. It is the corporations that own both Democrats and Republicans alike. The only proper approach to the wretched health care legislation currently working its way through Congress at this point is to kill it and start over. At these town meetings staged events, Obama and the Democrats need to hear in no uncertain terms that we don't want no stinking Obamacare. We want Medicare for all. That's from by Dave Lindorf, Philadelphia-based journalist and columnist. His latest book is The Case for Impeachment. He can be reached at dlindorf@mindspring.com, and that's off the Counterpunch website, which is from an August 11th article, Hecklers Unite, Why Aren't Progressives Disrupting Obamacare Town Halls? So you might want to check that one out. Let's get back to some of those street interviews while we still have time. And if you want to call in, you can. 427-3772 is still, yes, it's still the phone number.
really need to, like, take in consideration when they're waking us up that we're usually not going to be in the best of moods from being woken up. So maybe just step back and give us a chance to wake up before they start writing tickets and making rude comments and provoking us. I think they'll get a little bit better response out of the people if they just do that, at least.
Have you gotten many tickets?
I've gotten one ticket here for illegally sleeping, but the guy was pretty respectful about it, and I was able to go to the homeless shelter and get it wrote off. For the most part, there are a few bad cops out there that'll give you a hard time and make your life a living hell, but there are some respectful cops out there, and so, you know, you people out there that are out there illegally sleeping, just take in consideration that a little courtesy and a little, this, you know, human respect will go a long way with these guys.
What's your name there, Speaker?
My name is Matt.
Thanks, Matt. No problem. Any comments?
We have, like, 60 I'm going to get straight to the point about this and make a short sweet. My name's Don. I sleep illegally. Well, from their point of view, illegally. From my point of view, I don't give a shit about the rules, free speech. It's just everybody's got the right to sleep. The Constitution in every which way is being broken because man has equal rights. And, you know, it's not right that the cops are going out there and being neo-Nazis with everybody of the less fortunate. And, you know, I'm not all about that. You know, I'm a bit of an anarchist. I don't like government. I don't like authority. But, you know, I do respect the laws, but in some ways I don't, because honestly, people in our situation don't have any rights.
Now, have you had any personal experiences in the last week you want to pass on?
Personal experiences. The only experiences I have is I don't enjoy sleeping out of a cardboard dumpster because I'm afraid to be exposed in public because of threats of getting tickets and stuff. I've been on the streets here in Santa Cruz off and on for 8 years. I've seen plenty of what goes on, and it's just not right. I think that, you know, even people with no money or the less fortunate, you know, need to be respected a little more.
How many people do you think that you know would be interested in doing a tent city or camp out or sleep out if it involved repeatedly going to jail and coming back again?
I would definitely do it.
Why don't you ask around, let me know, because it's always a possibility. Other cities, attorneys are challenging the sleeping ban. If we got a bunch of people together here, we might be able to do something similar.
Well, you know, as long as we got people that are mature about the situation and that aren't, you know, loaded at the time and that are actually reasonable and respectful about the situation, I think that it would work out. You know, people can't be out of their minds, and they can't be driving everybody nuts. They need to be respectful about the situation.
My card.
Okay.
We've been talking with
Don Solano.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah. No
Get
problem.
Back to me. If you start a homeless group, and we'll organize. You know.
Definitely. I'm always up for it.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah. No problem.
And we're downtown on Pacific Avenue. It's Saturday, August 1st. We have the legalized marijuana table. We have Dave. Hey, Dave. All in front of Borders. And, of course, the inimitable horny guy, Donnie, the trumpeteer. And there you have it. Today is the ninth week of protest in front of Bunny's Shoes with the aim of encouraging shoppers to shop where the Pledge for Human Rights is displayed. So it is about 2 o'clock, and I'm taking one of the...
And again, for those who are new to this whole thing, for 9 weeks, this is actually August 1st, that was the last protest we've done up to now, we have been in front of Bunny's Shoes protesting the crackdown that various merchants, city attorney, the police, city council has been doing against homeless people in Santa Cruz, tightening the laws, removing public space for people, enforcing the sleeping ban that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night or cover up with blankets in a city where there is zero shelter, emergency walk-in shelter, according to Doug Loisel, the Homeless Service Center director. So this is a protest that has gone on regularly up through August 1st, and here's some more of that protest in front of Bunny's Shoes. It's not that Bunny's has bad shoes or that we don't like rabbits It's that Bunny's was one of the stores that signed declarations that actually criminalized even further two homeless musicians, Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon, making it not just illegal to sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz, which it is, but making it an immediate jailing offense to sleep downtown. We've asked those stores who were concerned initially in their declarations about their own private property to clarify that that's what they're concerned about, that they don't want to criminalize people who from sleeping, period, but they want to make it to be the right of people to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And that's what the pledge we have and we're giving to people to put in their stores has said. And a small number of stores have put this pledge in their store, about 15 or 20, and Bunny Shoes and the nearby hat company right next to them, who shares the same entrance, have not. You be the judge if you want to patronize those stores. I'm not, but then again, I'm not a hat or a shoe guy, you know.
Two benches that are comfortably situated in front of Bunny's, they face each other, unlike the benches as they were set up in 1999 when Robert Steffen was harassed by the Bunny Shoes management. That's the guy who later became known as the Pink Umbrella Man because he was conducting a presidential campaign from inside a black garbage sack. So that was considered an eyesore, even though he wasn't here all night. He was only here during the day. He was accused of ogling the Bunny Shoes women, and they actually tried to get an injunction against him and failed. Judge Stevens didn't think that there was adequate evidence, and there was actually a lot of, although it wasn't displayed in court, background where he had attempted to get homeless shelter and was arrested three times at the homeless service center for sleeping on the property because he was not allowed in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which now no longer exists. There is no church program. It's only a waiting list shelter program for the Paul Lee Loft, and potentially there's negotiations for a new building near the homeless service center that'll be purchased and open up for an additional, I don't know, 80 to 100 beds. Of course, for a population of 1,500 to 2,000, that's relatively small drop in the bucket and has little to do with meaningful shelter, which could be provided at a fraction of the cost and pretty quickly in campgrounds and car parks if there were the will to do it. And we're at the sleeping ban boycott table. India Joe Schultz has arrived with hot soup. And Becky Johnson is chatting with him.
It's more easy to get the nutrition you need in a shorter period of time.
Seems like it'd be a discussion about raw food, perhaps.
Wait for it to cook, and they had to get nice to each other.
I like that part, too, yeah.
A rather obscure conversation about raw food. But in any case, hot soup, come and get it.
I said hot soup is the basis of civilization.
There you go.
Human race.
Oh, actually, it's helping to destroy our local businesses, which
is
either positive or negative, depending on how you look at it.
I like
you know how to unlock this.
So we're here in front of the table talking with
Gabrielle
and
Lala.
And you two are just passing through, but Lala, you've passed through before.
I have passed through before.
And you've actually slept in your vehicle, Lala, a criminal, coming back to the scene of the crime?
Yes.
So what was that? How are you doing now? What are you up to? Still in your vehicle?
I'm still in my vehicle.
Still engaging in the same old criminal ways, eh?
Yes.
Is this one of your compatriots in crime?
Yes, she is. My partner in crime.
I see. So you two are kind of trying to case out the city for more criminal behavior, eh?
Sure.
Yes. So how many times have you flouted the law sleeping overnight in Santa Cruz?
In Santa Cruz?
3 years.
No. Really? Yeah. Many, it's too many to count.
And have you ever been hassled for doing so?
Never.
Now, perhaps this is because of your exotic appearance. You're African-American. You have beautiful dreads, nicely beaded. You have a very unusual... Well, describe what you've got. You've got a nice nose ring. You have numerous piercings. I mean, you're more of a city treasure than a homeless derelict who we want to get rid of. But perhaps the police wouldn't see it that way if they caught you sleeping. Have they ever come up to your vehicle?
No, they have not.
Well, that's great. Now, is that because you think that you have a special mystic power, or what do you think is the reason for that?
I definitely... do you want to take this one?
I mean, is there a reason,
do you
think?
Mystic power? Yeah. I mean, we do, you know, try to
protection.
Co-create harmony and balance, and we do see our world as a world that is loving and kind and fair.
Safe.
So, how long this time have you been in Santa Cruz trying out your mystic ways?
We just got here yesterday.
So you really haven't, we haven't had a chance to test the hypothesis. Does mysticism work against police repression around the sleeping van?
Well, I did sleep last night in my vehicle.
Were you prominently displayed?
I was very prominently displayed, and I'm still there. I haven't moved. Usually I keep going, but when I got here, I just didn't move, and it's... And I've been there, and I'm very prominently right in this area.
We may have to send Santa Cruz's 1,500 homeless people to your vehicle to ask your secret.
Well, you know, I...
Anyway, we've been talking with...
Lala.
Thank you, Lala. And, of course, do I get a hug?
Of course.
We're talking with...
Beat.
And, Beat, you say you have a sense of how... What were you just saying a moment ago?
Well, you know... This is a supposedly a representative republic, and I think that in a representative republic, they should be treated, the people that are keeping other people from sleeping, they should be prevented from sleeping themselves in their own houses. And perhaps they'd get an idea what it's like. I was homeless for 15 years. I'm not now, but I'm only a step away. So, guys... I find out you're sleeping in your house, I'm going to wake you up.
Could be the trumpeter is coming to your neighborhood. We've been talking with...
The trumpeter. I can scream like a banshee. Enjoy your sleep if I can't.
Thank you, man. All right.
And it looks like there's some gaps in this tape. That being the case, perhaps what I'll do is attempt to spin ahead a bit and see if I can find the where this tape actually continues, which actually isn't too far off, I don't think. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and we're listening to the August 1st protest, the ninth protest at Bunny's Shoes, which you can also view video from. Either that or some of the prior protests on the Indie Bay website. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org. Why am I having trouble finding the... a little difficulty. Ah, there we go. All right, then. Let's hear a little more from that protest, and then we'll be have to be leaving you. But you can check again on Sunday when I will be back. I'll be back at 9:30 in the morning. And there may be some more discussion of the internal topic that we were having the last two Sundays around noon, talking about questions of censorship, racism, how you deal with internal conflicts in a collective as they come up, how that happens in other collectives or other alternative radio stations, like matters. It's actually important to some folks in free radio and the free radio audience, too, because... We've had actually impacts on our programming because of the internal dissents. Some people want to make sure Democracy Now! Gets played in the morning. It doesn't get played all the time. Some people are backing off from work because they feel there's some friction has arisen in their issues, the broader issues of what about Spanish language programming? How much should there be? Where should it be? Should we be appealing to the English-speaking more well money lathered audience, all kinds of questions come up, and we may be taking up those questions again on Sunday. Here's some more interviews from the street.
So it's about 5 to 3, and we have a number of folks around the table. John, Jen. It's about 5 to 3, and we have John, Jen, and Rick, and a man from Skateboard Land. Bernard's over there giving out flyers in front of a hat company, looking pretty good. And there's Jack, who's also explaining to people why we are encouraging people to boycott Bunny's Shoes, or at least I am. There's some controversy about that. And all the way from San Jose is that man about men, the man with the Napa cap, Dangerous John. He's also keeping an eye on things. And then over here we have Mike.
I now feel like
Musical Mike, or Merriweather Mike, as he's called. Beggar Backer Becky Johnson. And who knows who else. Get the scoop. What's your name, sir?
Spaz.
Spaz, we may have talked about this before. We've spoken before. Some new events have happened or not?
Like Skateworks that just all like right now refuses to put on the what's it called? Refused to put the flag. What's it called? Business is not discriminating.
The pledge.
They refused to use the pledge. And I used to work in a skate shop, and I became homeless because my skate shop basically went under the table. And I've been trying to get a work job there. They've been complaining, bitching, and whining. They can't make any more sales of longboards because they don't know how to tune them. And that was like my specialty was in downhill skateboarding, slalom boarding, and all these other different kinds of downhill sliding and all longboarding for the most part. And they refused to hire me pretty much because I'm homeless.
What was your business before?
I worked in the skate shop.
And this was the Santa Cruz skate shop?
No, this was the downtown Gilroy skate shop. They went out of business because the town closed them down by raising their rent for the store location to $2,000 more a month that they could afford.
When was this?
About a year ago.
And so you've been unemployed for a year?
Pretty much.
And how do you survive at night? What do you do?
Crawl up into my van, park it somewhere where I know I can probably not have to worry as much about getting arrested for camping. At least in San Francisco, if you had a vehicle to sleep in, the police wouldn't hassle you up there, but down here, they hassle you even if you're sleeping in a car.
Boy, got funny shoes!
And I think it's bullshit to like not let people sleep, because they had the same problem in San Jose. What did people start doing? Going out and buying meth so they would stay up all night instead.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, that's what they do up there, pretty much.
Aha, the meth solution. This could be an answer for the Santa Cruz homeless.
Exactly, and it's going to end up having a huge drawback in drug problems, non-plur drugs, as I like
Let's
to call
not be negative. It could be a whole new creative horizon.
Let's not go to that area there at all, but seeing people breaking into houses and then they're like breaking into shops just to like sell off stuff just to make more money to get their addiction.
Here, here. Thank you, Spaz.
That's just all bad there.
Appreciate that. Now we have a passerby. What's your name, sir?
I knew this was going to be some sort of ambush, right?
We got you, man. Who are you anyway with that hat? I mean, you may think you can slip by.
Slip by.
Thank you, yes.
I'm Dr. Doug Loisel. I'm the Executive Director of Homeless Services Center Santa Cruz.
And today is the first day of the 50-cent meal.
Actually, it's tomorrow.
August 1st. Oh, it's actually going to be August 2nd.
Yeah. Well, isn't it August 3rd?
August 3rd would be Monday, I believe.
Yeah, Monday. Monday is the first day.
So you keep putting it ahead. Is this because of pressure from exciting activists? Could be, come on, admit it. We've had an impact on you, right?
Actually, you have had an impact on me.
Really?
Yeah.
What impact would that be?
Well, you were talking about, you know, why is it people can't come to HSC during the day? Why can't they access the hygiene bay? I looked into it a little bit, and the hygiene bay, I think we can keep open at least all day in relation to using the restrooms, and then probably we'll push it to like 9 at night. But I have been talking to the staff about just getting them to open it 24 hours. Let's see how we can work that out.
This is for people who have to take a leak.
Or other things.
Or a poo-poo, as the case may be. But what if they start shooting up or copulating in the showers, as some say, is the perennial problem with having public restrooms?
I think that we, since the shower stalls have about, you can focus on my feet if you like.
Pretty exciting knees you got there.
Got about this much space in the bottom and about this much space in the top, so I think any copulation might be an
interesting video opportunity.
Well, yeah.
Hypno chicks, perhaps?
No, not
certainly.
More like
exposed in the baño.
Something gone wild.
There you go.
Yeah.
So this actually is a relatively new idea. Those bays have been closed for the last year or two, as I understand it.
Well, they're not closed
during the day.
There's just periods of time that the bays can be used and periods of time in which they can't. So now I want to kind of expand that a little bit, try to give opportunity for people to use the facilities longer periods of time. And really, it's a matter of you know, finding the right staff, getting the right staff in place, having some structure involved, and then moving forward with it.
And this, of course, is Doug Loisel, probably the first and probably the last homeless service center director to actually come into the studio, be interviewed, actually come to a real protest, be interviewed there, because he is at the Bunnies protest, and who claims actually to credits homeless activists with useful suggestions he's actually paying some serious attention to, unlike the Santa Cruz City Council and every other homeless service center director for the last 20 years. So I suppose this is good. The problem with this guy, though, is that he's also implementing a 50-cent meal. He's sympathetic to running off homeless people from parking spots or limiting them to 2 hours in the areas nearby. So Doug is a mixed bag, Doug Loisel. He's certainly a nice guy. He's certainly far more accessible than previous homeless service center folks. And we'll be talking more with him, or actually you'll be hearing more from him on Sunday when I come back at 9:30 in the morning. Coming up now, however, is From the Cream to the Dregs, or so we say, From the Ashes to the Smoke, with Uncle Dennis as he winds his way through the latest burn report from the hills above Santa Cruz, where the fire is a-raging in the hot weather. Plus, he'll be doing some hot music as well. Hopefully, that'll be more exciting than less exciting, but more refreshing than the fire. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 or sooner. I never can tell. I might show up with a flashback earlier. If you want to reach me even before that, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will talk to you. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides.
A dream last night. What a lovely dream it was. I dreamed we all were all right, happy in a land of Oz. Why did everybody laugh when I told them my dream? I guess they all were so far from that kind of scene, feeling mean. I heard a song last night. What a lovely song it was. I thought I'd hum it all night. Unforgettable, because all of the players were playing together, and all of the heavies were light as a feather. All I'll remember is a feeling tomorrow, but as I recall, the rest will just follow. I had a dream last night. What a lovely dream it was. I dreamed we all were all right, happy in a land of Oz. What a lovely dream it was. What a lovely dream it was.
And we are going to be magically transporting ourselves to a meadow on a farm in upstate New York 40 years ago. That's right, folks. This coming weekend is the 40th anniversary of the Woodstock Music and Art Festival. What started out as a three-day pay-for-a-ticket festival for a couple tens of thousands of people turned out to be a four-day mud fest for hundreds of thousands of people. I believe the final total was somewhat over 400,000 people actually showed up at Woodstock. More people were born than died, and other than the rain and the muck and everything else, there was some really great music. Unfortunately, there was some, kind of tensions that went on behind the scenes that I'm sure that we'll get to here as the evening goes on. But tonight and next week, this show, From the Cream to the Dregs, will be a we will be playing a four CD set comprising some of the music of Woodstock, and I will try and dreg up some more music from Woodstock as we go along. I want to encourage you that if you were not there, and I was not myself, Woodstock was on the other side of the country from me. I didn't hear about it till it was all over. There were a lot of people there, and it was one of the seminal music concerts of all time. There were two or three others that probably would say at the time were like the Monterey Pop Festival and some others that were sort of turning points in the history of rock and roll. But certainly Woodstock has gone down in history as one of those seminal events in rock and roll, formative events. Pretty much all of the really great acts in rock and roll at the time, except for perhaps the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, were not there, but everyone else pretty much was. So that's what we're going to be doing here on From the Cream to the Dregs for the next two shows. So stay tuned. If you really want to get into the feel of it, go sit out in a meadow with free radio on your radio and kick back into the evening hours as we listen to the music of Woodstock 40 years ago. We just heard John Sebastian, and now we're going to hear a group that we actually heard last week. And we heard this tune last week. But anyway, here is the here is Canned Heat from Woodstock.
Gotta get going, but I can't stay here long now, 'cause I'm tired of the way I've been dogged around. Well, I've got to roam, baby, find me a brand new home. Buzzing and fighting, man, you know I should. just exactly where I'm going, I cannot say, but we might even leave the USA. But there's a brand new game I don't want to play. Screaming and crying, well, you got a home, man, long as I've got mine. Gotta get going. Gotta get going. Can't stay here long now, 'cause I'm tired of the way I've been dogged around. Well, I've got to roam and find me a brand new.
Everybody's ground, getting comfortable now. Starting to fit just right. Sit there. Look at all those people around you. Get acquainted. Have a smoke.
To get back to the warning that I've received, you may take it with however many grains of salt you wish, that the brown acid that is circulating around us is not specifically too good. It's suggested that you do stay away from that. Of course, it's your own trip, so be my guest. But please be advised that there is a warning on that one, okay? Elliot from Harvard. The hitchhikers you picked up need the pills from your car. Please go to the information station right away. Louis Pitnick. Louis Pitnick, your brother is in the Paulsburg police station.
Number nine. Let's welcome Mr. Richie Havens. Thank you.
next week. Guitar.